1890s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Hello, Higher Side Chatters. How the heck are you? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and bracing for impact in sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and today is the day we've all been waiting for. Because we've been dancing around the idea of a big quarantine that seems to exist around certain sectors of science for quite some time, yet we haven't truly penetrated what some of these things might be, because the shadowy string pullers have bent nearly all aspects of modern society to their will, and as a result, these areas of study are far too off the radar for modern man. Although today's guest has lived deeply within those forbidden realms of study, having stumbled into it before the first grade, and has widely been described as Tesla 2.0. His name is Eric Dollard, and he's an electrical engineer who is known as a living legend in the field of electrical research. He is considered by many to be the most knowledgeable expert alive today on the true nature of electricity, author of the landmark mathematical papers, Symbolic Representation of Alternating Electrical Waves, and Symbolic Representation of the Generalized Electric Wave. He's also the author of Condensed Intro to Tesla Transformers and Theory of Wireless Power. He's also the only person since Tesla's death to successfully build a magnifying transmitter. A man of many accomplishments, and I'm going to work hard to hold my own, and I'm very excited to have him here. Eric, my man, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. You have a very impressive resume. Your life is quite interesting and a really unique saga. So to kind of get us started here, can you give the people who might not be familiar with you some insight into your background and how you got into some of this suppressed knowledge?
Well, it's kind of hard just to jump into that, but I've been working on this since I've been 6 years old, and my father and grandfathers were electrical workers before me, so it was right there for me to avail myself to, and through my own experimental researches, my knowledge of electricity gradually started to deviate from the established knowledge of electricity until we're at the point we're at today.
Interesting. So, you were experimenting with electricity in grade school, right? I mean, you were coming into class and bringing equipment into class and getting up in front of the room and showing some of this stuff, right?
Yeah, that was in grammar school. That was every year. There was Eric Dollard's Day, and then I would bring whatever apparatus I had constructed home and bring it to school to show the other students, and then sometimes the curriculum of this would work out that the bully in the classroom would be brought up as my assistant, and then he would receive a shock in front of all the other students and made the laughing stock, and then that kind of de-bullied the bully.
Right on. So, how did you get to be working with electricity in an unconventional way? How did you get out of the typical study of electricity and into some of these other realms that other people haven't gotten into?
Well, again, it's kind of complicated to explain, but during my high school years, I started receiving a lot of material support from the Radio Corporation of America, the transmitter site in Bolitas, California, and this is the point in which I discovered a lot of these things that Tesla was working on, not knowing about Tesla. I discovered these things myself. People at RCA were lost to explain any of this. So as I kept pursuing these areas, I started to find more and more that there was a whole another type of electricity that we hadn't known about. And then I found out about Nikola Tesla, and then it became my life's aim after that to thoroughly investigate the other side of electricity.
Interesting. So people get a good idea of what we're talking about. What are some of the practical applications of this new type of energy, or how exactly does it work, in comparison to what people are familiar with?
Well, now that's an even more difficult explanation. Basically, the electricity as it exists today in the technological world is called electromagnetism. But the electricity that Tesla was working with and that I've been pursuing is more properly called magnetodielectricity. It's the mirror image, so to speak, of electromagnetism. And my main interest, because of RCA and what RCA was interested in having me do was to develop this in the area of communications and come up with communication systems that worked with these particular type of waveforms, with the hope that the performance would supersede that of the electromagnetism and enable the Radio Corporation of America to pursue the medium and shortwave radio frequency transmissions and basically bite off the opposition that was coming from the satellite business.
Ah, that makes sense. So let me ask you, man, are there any, say, energetic properties or benefits in terms of power with this alternative form of electricity when compared to, say, our typical GE electricity?
Well, not necessarily, because this society wants to use electricity and energy in an electromagnetic form, but this is more of an organic type of situation. So trying to express it in thermodynamic terms is very difficult. But it is interesting that this particular type of electricity tends to want to be self-sustaining.
That's interesting. Would you say it's more abundant or available than our typical channeled through wires electricity?
Actually, yes, because the Earth is charged with this. We live inside of an extremely powerful electric field, but being that it's relatively uniform and in the way that it's directed, we can't necessarily experience it. But this is part of the process that causes living things to grow.
Wow, that is news to me. Do you know of any, say, biologists who have stumbled upon this electrical component to life? Or is it just completely untalked about?
Well, actually, the science of electricity has been banned since the advent of Einstein and his followers. So electricity is not allowed to be discussed in any way, shape, or form in any of the sciences.
Now, that's something that I do feel like I've noticed and we've talked about a little bit before. I'm curious as to why. Do you think it might be because the technology that would come out of studying this would be in any kind of opposition to our capitalistic system?
Well, right now we're not speaking in terms of technology. We're speaking in terms of a general understanding. So, you know, if you attribute the process of life to be electrical, that doesn't necessarily express a technological situation unless you're using that electricity to create life for some kind of so-called practical or whatever purpose. So ultimately, the dimensions of capitalism and money and technology and energy and all these things that we're accustomed to are really not part of this world that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I find that aspect, because I've heard you speak before, that aspect of talking about physics and physicists really interesting, because that seems to be kind of the false paradigm of learning how the world works, and that seems to be the way that they keep this knowledge about a new form of electricity off the table. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, it's approximately so. It's been an ongoing process and this is going to be a central point in my next presentation of where did things go wrong and where did this restricted and misunderstanding condition come about. It's been a slow incremental process. It can be, you know, actually linked to a de-evolutionary process in general that the human species is undergoing. So as centuries progressed, everything started to become more and more defined in terms of gross matter and any type of spiritual or ethereal or similar type of situation is gradually erased from the equation until now it's just hard physical substance and everything else is denied in existence.
That jives a lot with the things we talk about, considering that there are people who are steering this ship and they seem to be steering it into a direction of devolution rather than evolution. If there were, say, physicists listening or people who have, you know, gone through the typical college indoctrination of physics and they're listening to you and they're like, what is this guy talking about? A new form of electricity. You know, what do you say to physicists to show them that they're buying into kind of a false paradigm or more of a religious viewpoint rather than a scientific one?
Well, you can't really discuss the matter with them because there's a pathological response that comes about. And then all discussion ends, and it could even turn around where these people could, you know, become malevolent and try to damage your existence.
And that has happened to you quite a bit. From what I understand, you've had your work destroyed and interfered with several times over the years, correct?
Yeah, due to a number of varying factors, the real estate office and their connivings is a principal source of my trouble. Another one is, is the so-called establishment science. And then there's also a very heavy racial element involved and a kind of negative spiritual force that works with that. So, and just the general nature of America to destroy everything it comes in contact with. So there's multiple manifestations of the phenomena that ends up in the destruction of everything that I try to put together until it's reached the point where everything's been destroyed and there's not much hope of recovering any of my facilities.
That is a shame, and I'm so sorry to hear that, but it seems like kind of a textbook pattern for people who seem to be on the track of something that would be helpful to humanity or more gets to the true nature of our environment. But it's interesting that you mention a negative spiritual force. I was just talking to another guest about, it seems like anywhere you look in history, it seems like with any cutting-edge science, there seems to be a weird occult affiliation, whether it's, you know, the Nazis and their obvious occult affiliation, or NASA and the way they cryptically name things, and then CERN also has done some strange performances and has a statue of Shiva. It's odd. It's a little weird why typical scientists who should be materialist scientists also have this weird connection to the occult. I'm sure, have you noticed that at all?
Oh, extremely so. In fact, actually, I wrote a whole paper on it called Wardenclyffe Denied, of why the recent acquisition of the Wardenclyffe facility, or what's left of it, by some historical society, that Tesla's work would never be allowed to continue there. And I outlined all the various forces from my own personal experience that would prevent that from happening. Of course, it's came to pass that none of that will be allowed to happen there. And I pretty much detailed it all there. It's not one of my more widely available papers, but I think I probably should make it so. It was written under extremely horrible circumstances of living in my car in the deadest part of the Nevada desert with about 8 degrees outside and a 30-mile-an-hour wind. So it was kind of an appropriate weather and living condition to go along with a presentation like that.
Yeah, it seems like a lot to deal with. And for people who might not be so familiar with your backstory, as you've been doing all this cutting-edge research and coming up with a lot of things and having labs, you know, building labs, building high-tech equipment, having it destroyed, you've actually lived in your Corolla since 1987, is that right?
Yes.
Wow. You have been dealing with a lot, my man.
Well, actually, it's quite enjoyable living the Corolla. It really helped with my employment situation in Los Angeles. Normally, I would be forced to charge $100 an hour for my work, which even fairly prosperous companies have a difficult time paying. But the fact that I don't have all this cultural and sociological baggage, which integrated usually amounts to about $500,000 to $750,000 that people have to embroil their lives in, I don't have to charge hardly anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I can charge $30 an hour, and everybody's happy.
Yeah, you definitely have low overhead. And we mentioned kind of free energy a little bit, and I know that everyone asks you about that. And I've heard you say in one of these talks that we should have more than enough energy on the planet just with the movement of the Earth. And that's something I never considered, and that sounds pretty interesting. How would you harness that?
Well, you would have to establish some point of reference so that motion would manifest itself, and that's the difficulty. That's something that Tesla was striving for and electrically managed to achieve such a, universal point of reference. That's how his telluric transmission system operated. But I'm kind of in opposition to any of this free energy scheme, so to speak, because with the energy gluttony that's increasing at a hyperbolic rate, it would just burn the planet up. So looking at the situation from an engineering standpoint, from constructing facilities and what's going on with the public utility companies today and how they're configuring things, is the solar collector technology, semiconductor technology, has reached a state of perfection where all reasonable energy needs can be met that way, and then rather than heating the earth, it would tend to result in a slight reduction in temperature.
Yeah, that seems like a win-win.
So that's really the only way to go. The rest of this stuff, you know, in Tesla's day, backwards, with the population of the earth and with so-called civilization being isolated, relatively small areas, and the rate of population growth not having passed the hyperbolic knee, but it would be something to consider, some type of energy system where you're extracting it from the ether, let's say, or the movement of the earth, or any of these type of things. But now it's not feasible. It's a bad idea.
I gotcha. Yeah, because of the idea of giving people something with no limit, they're just going to consume, waste.
Well, that's very clear. Example of that is the automobile in America. A passenger car now masquerades as a pickup truck with six wheels. This thing, you know, is an enormous behemoth. It consumes enormous quantities of fuel, makes enormous quantities of pollution and noise, and they're getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you give people free energy, It'll just run to the extreme. It'll be the noise and the gluttony, and it just, you know, even if there's no pollution, the heat output from the inefficiency, the fact that all energy ultimately ends up in the garbage can of the ether as heat, it's just not practical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an angle I never considered, but that makes a lot of sense.
The more important factor involved is food production.
Mm-hmm.
Because the agribiz reality is actually, you know, it claims to be able to produce more food, but the quality of the food is dropping, and the damage it does to its surroundings is increasing. Meanwhile, the human population is growing at a hyperbolic rate, so the curves are not orienting themselves in a direction in the future that looks very promising for mankind.
Right, we got a lot of problems coming down the pike. It definitely seems that way. When it comes to the big energy companies, they're making some changes that are like taking steps backwards, right? I mean, apparently they're making some changes that are more expensive and are worse for the energy grid. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a very perplexing situation. And, you know, a lot of the higher-ups want me to analyze this. The whole electrical system of this country seems to be going retrograde. And it's going from a polyphase, normally three-phase situation, into three independent single-phase systems, which is very unsafe because you can't get ground fault protection. It leads to harmonics and interference and creates this basic sea of electromagnetic pollution. It makes my work very difficult because there's all this interference to all of my antennas and ground systems and what have you, that I have to build like special rooms and isolation transformers to block this stuff off. It's actually costing the utility companies a lot of money to do this. And I'm not clear exactly what's going on, but from, you know, observing utility companies in action, it looks like we have a situation like a railroad locomotive with, you know, a massive number of cars behind it, roaring down the Tehachapi Pass into the town of Mojave, and it's going faster and faster, and you climb up forward to find out what's going on with the engineer, and there's nobody at the controls. That's what's going on right now. So, for example, there's a substation in a place where I habitate, and it has a capacitor bank in it. So I noticed the capacitor bank, which is quite large for the location and the need for that type of reactive power in the power lines, was being taken down. So I went and talked to the guy there, and he told me they're putting in a bigger one. And I go, well, it doesn't make any sense. And he goes, well, that's what they want. They want a bigger one, and they need more reactive power for this and that. But reactive power wasn't needed at that point in the system. It was needed 30 miles away. None of it made any sense. So I knew what was going to happen. So at any rate, I came back a couple of months later, and the bigger capacitor bank had been installed. It had been increased from 2 megavolt amperes reactive to 6 megavolt amperes reactive. And the circuit breaker to it was remaining open. So at any rate, I was told by one of the switchboard operators at a generating station that that my assertion was right. They closed the circuit breaker on the thing, and the intense surge of reactive power tripped all the breakers and knocked the grid down in that area, so they just left the thing turned off. But then I go, well, if the capacitor bank is too big, why not remove the fuses on the individual capacitors and return it to the original size to cover your rear end that you screwed up? And nobody thought of that until finally, I guess, that idea had leaked somewhere into the operating office, and they turned around and did that. But I think that is a good story about where we're at in the electrical engineering world today.
Yeah, that's a great example. It just seems like the blind leading the blind. Even the experts don't seem to be very educated on electricity.
Yeah, and the way that it takes a decidedly wrong turn, like converting from delta to Y in the three-phase power system, almost makes it seem conspiratorial.
Right. Yeah, it's more vulnerable to EMP, apparently.
Very vulnerable. It makes the customer wide open to the EMP. For example, in a normal system, well, let's get a little background on it. There's a device, an electrical system called the transformer. Everybody has heard the word transformer, but they don't have a clue of what it means. They might be able to identify it as an object hanging on a utility pole. The transformer has two very specific functions. One is to take the intense rate of magnetic variation, which is defined as a high voltage, and wind it down to a low rate of magnetic variation, which is called the low voltage, which makes it more manageable for the customer. In the process of doing this, the transformer exhibits what's called an impedance. So if there's a catastrophe on the low side, the impedance of the transformer will buffer the amount of power that will flow into the catastrophe, so you don't end up with a nuclear holocaust in your living room because the space heater shorted out. The third aspect that the transformer has, it's important in transmission, is it metallically separates the high voltage primary system from the low voltage secondary system. So that way all the lightning transients, fault current related surges and imbalances and all these things don't end up in the customer's electrical system. Well, this delta and the Y conversion of the nation's power systems puts a bypass wire over the transformer.
Mm-hmm.
So to explain this in another way, when you go into your garage or laundry room or whatever, and there's the metal case of your washing machine, which is connected to so-called ground.
Right.
I think that's something everyone kind of understands. So when you lean on the washing machine and you're in contact with it, then you're in contact with this grounding system, which involves a ground rod, which really doesn't offer much electrical conductivity to ground. It's more there as a show than anything else, unless you're in a salt marsh. So the neutral wire of the power system, which is the grounded wire, connects to all the houses and everybody's washing machines, and all the wires overhead on the secondary, the 110, 220, and all that, they're all metallically connected through the secondary of the transformer. So when you put your hand on the washing machine, you are in contact with that metallic system in the environment of that size, which is usually limited, to maybe one or two blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe just one or two houses. So whatever radio waves or nuclear impulses or lightning surges or whatever there may be, the surface area, so to speak, of that neighborhood electrical system is limited, and it can't really grab much of it. Now, when you bypass the transformer, electrostatically, now when you put your hand on the wash machine, you are in contact with the entire metallic extent of the electrical system of the entire town as fed by the substation.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds way worse.
Okay, so now you got a situation where, you know, if there's a lightning discharge or something that initiates a traveling wave on the high side, well, that traveling wave, you know, now is going to flow right through the jumper on the transformer and also take part, you know, in energizing with the transient. It's going to energize the secondary system. So you're starting to get hooked to a big antenna. And then at the substation, through the substation grounding system, the primary and secondaries are connected together again. So metallically, with the modern electrical system, when you put your hand on the washing machine, you are in metallic contact with the entire grid.
Wow.
So I think that's the most practical way to express a situation. Now, if there is an EMP surge and it causes a traveling wave on the very high side, you know, the wires that are on the towers, then that traveling wave just distributes itself through the entire power system and is no longer reflected or blocked at the transformer banks. You always, originally in the engineering, you always used a delta Y bank to short that part out internally and to prevent it from traveling from the primary, the secondary, the power system, but now all the transformers are YY connected with the jumper. So the whole thing has just become one big giant antenna.
Hmm. Wow, that makes perfect sense. I mean, you explained it so well, but I mean, they're taking these smaller closed networks and just integrating them together, which obviously increases vulnerability. And if it's more expensive for them to do this, this really doesn't make sense. And like you said, if you wanted to get conspiratorial, you'd have to wonder if someone was trying to set up some type of false flag situation, this is kind of the groundwork they would lay to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really looks that way. There's another complication, too, is that the iron in the transformers and the motors and the waveforms of the rectifiers and, you know, like your power supplies for your electronics and all that generate harmonics.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, the loads were mostly motors and light bulbs, which did not generate an excessive quantity of harmonics, but today the loads are principally rectifiers and solid-state devices, which are almost totally harmonic in their power flow. So when you start to configure an electrical system in a Y rather than a delta configuration, the third harmonic is basically compounded instead of neutralized. So now there's two frequencies flowing in the power system. One is 60 cycles a second, and the other one's 180 cycles a second. The 180 cycle a second wave flows in the same mode that the nuclear EMP or the radio interference does. So the whole power system is becoming a giant antenna radiating a rough 180 cycle second waveform with harmonics going all the way up to 9,000 cycles a second. So everything is immersed in this large buzz. That's another complication with this type of power configuration. Now, looking at it from the cost standpoint and overall engineering reality, one of the first places I seen this conversion come about was in the city of Santa Barbara. Southern California Edison has a 16.5 kilovolt distribution system, which is delta connected. In other words, there's three wires for three phases, and all the transformers are connected in a closed loop. And it's about the highest voltage in the 15 kV class. It pushes it a little over, but at any rate, because the line voltage to ground is the square root of 3 times the line to line, you can still use 15 kV line hardware. The higher voltage of 16.5 rather than, let's say, 4.8 or whatever allows for less copper. So it's a very economical system. So I noticed all of a sudden the power company is going through a great expense to put up a fourth wire. And what they're doing is they're doing a retrograde Y connection on the electrical system of the city of Santa Barbara, which is causing them to have to replace all the transformers from 16.5 kV to 9.6 kV and connecting them to this neutral conductor, which is heavy and expensive, and the transformers are expensive, and this costs them many millions of dollars to do this. And it really makes you wonder, well, why? What's the point in doing this?
You see no benefit at all.
Well, it's rather than a benefit, it causes all kinds of problems. And it's very dangerous to the customer because, accordingly, all the transformers are bypassed. Not that they necessarily have to be in a YY connection, but they are bypassed.
Man.
So here's something like $50 million has been spent to build a dangerous retrograde power system, and you really have to wonder what is the reasoning behind this. It almost seems psychotic. So either we're dealing with a certain type of mass psychosis in the utility business, or we're dealing with some kind of nefarious force that wants this to come about for a specific reason, or combinations thereof.
So that is definitely fascinating and insightful and something to look out for in the future. If we have a situation like that, we now have a little bit of insight to know that there might be something fishy going on. And I wanted to talk a bit about your career in working with this stuff. And like you've said, you've had several labs destroyed, your work interfered with many times over the years. Do you think this has been a concerted effort by an organized group, or obviously not random instances for you?
Well, when you're dealing with the element of the real estate office, that's a localized phenomenon. Even though they're all the same kind of predatory species, they're not in a conspiratorial cooperative effort against my work. It's just, I have no recourse to protect myself, and there's usually a lot of property involved in these large installations and a lot of valuable equipment, so it's natural, to try to connive the paperwork and whatever and take the property away from me and loot the installation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically one of the principal elements. There is an organized group that is specifically organized against my research. It's kind of an occult group. I haven't been able to track it all the way to its source, but it does operate under the name of Commonweal in Bolinas.
Mm.
And they have basically, told me to my face through their operatives that they are opposed to my research and they're going to do everything to stop it. And they go so far as to even interfere with my government contacts, which are usually very supportive in all this kind of stuff. There is no government suppression going on in my work that's detectable whatsoever, other than when the government is forced by this nefarious power to start doing things to screw me up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I've had people in the Coast Guard who I was consulting for at an installation tell me that they were visited by Commonweal, and they were told that they should not be doing business with me, and they managed to get up to the command and get it where I was finally banned from the station, to the detriment of the Coast Guard.
Wow. I mean, I have never heard of Commonweal, but that obviously sounds like a big thorn in your paw.
Well, Commonweal is, is one floating body of a broader thing that I haven't been able to put my finger on. It's the same group that got me out of the Integratron and destroyed what I had managed to duplicate of Van Tassel's work. They were, as well as the real estate connivers, they were involved in the loss of my Landers facility through some kind of background method that I'm not, I can't hire the investigators or whatever to follow up on this stuff, but they did start a major fire on my property and tried to claim that, that I was doing this and that, and that I was a terrorist and all these things. They tried to actually commandeer my station from me once. I'm pretty sure they're the ones that ended up with it. And they have one of their people in the White House as a president now. That's the scariest thing of all.
Wow. Yeah, I would say they'd have to be pretty powerful, because I think to keep people away from this kind of stuff, you have to incorporate the education system, the fields of science. I mean, no one has stumbled along this electricity stuff since Nikola Tesla, and now you're working on it. To keep it under wraps, I feel like there'd have to be a pretty large amount of energy that went into that, no?
Yes, and I've managed to, you know, through my own ways, determine that the principal source of funding for this is from the Rockefellers. So that tells you right there what's going on.
Right.
These are the people that create the wars. These are the people that stop the wars. These are the people that direct the course of invention. These are the people that lay the educational curriculum, which is pretty much agreed upon by everybody now, is basically just a process to produce mental retardation and not much more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a widespread thing. It has a spiritual element to it. There are, you know, things that it worships and whatever. It's kind of can be regarded as a type of neo-paganism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems to strive for some kind of racial condition, which is really hard to analyze. I mean, these things are all beyond, you know, what I'm supposed to be dealing with as an electrical engineer.
Right, right. Considering these people have so much power and have so many things on their plate, it's interesting that they would put so much attention into this field over such a long period of time. What do you think the threat is to their security or to their wealth for people to learn about this stuff in school as if they'd learn about anything else?
Well, I mean, I don't know. We're starting to get into speculation,
right.
You know, and that's something I really, you know, as a science type person, I don't want to really take this much farther. All I can do is give my observations, and then you can take it from there.
Fair. Well, I have heard you say also another sad element to your work being destroyed is that a lot of this equipment, a lot of the tools that you've used aren't even made anymore, so it's even harder to rebuild. Is that true?
Yeah, it's an impossible situation. It has me quite depressed, particularly being, you know, now that I'm in my 60s. I worked for 20 years in Los Angeles, half-time in the surplus business, to gather that inventory at Landers. And there was two generations before me. There was George Van Tassel and Walter J. DeRoche, who was the property owner, that had built it to this level. These surplus places in Los Angeles don't exist anymore.
Mm.
The other thing is that I can't go back to RCA and get another carload of insulators. I can't go to Bell Telephone and get another rack of repeater coils. It's not that there's no availability. And then on top of that, there's a fanaticism amongst the Orientals with any of this stuff that relates to Western Electric or Bell Telephone or, you know, the very components I need for a lot of my signal research and this telluric waveform study and all that type of stuff have driven the prices up 1,000 to 5,000% over what would be standard for some kind of surplus or, you know, take-apart item. So there's really no way for me to ever put back together what I had at Landers. The parts inventory alone was massive. I had complete manufacturing capabilities. I could produce one piece of Navy or Bell Telephone equipment to all the standards of that organization to the point that you couldn't tell that I built it. And every 4 months, I could produce one finished unit.
Wow. Wow.
I had billions of resistors and capacitors and transistors and tubes, all to military or Bell Telephone specifications. I had acres and acres of poles and wire, racks and racks of equipment. I think the video that somebody took there just before the place got looted is available now on the internet and for sale in order to keep paying the rent here. It's kind of not the way I've worked in the past, but then, you know, I've got to keep my facility going, so it's for sale. On the Eric P. Dollard website, there's a lot of pictures of the projects that we're working on presently and the pictures of the Landers installation. Some of them are there. The person that took the pictures has decided that withhold them from the public and join forces with the people right now presently that are trying to disrupt my work, which seems to be it's never going to go away. So my identity's been stolen. My name is put on the internet claiming me, you know, to be a meth addict and a charlatan and all that. And there seems to be nothing I can do about it. And I bet if you tracked it down, you would find out that the sources that are empowering these people to do this stuff would be the same people that were behind the scenes and the destruction of Landers and the loss of the RCA facility and all the rest of that kind of stuff.
Man, I feel for you on this. It's a very sad situation. Do you think that, given that we've mentioned that it's been since Nikola Tesla that someone else has really dived into electricity the way you have, do you think there are some parallels in both stories and the way that the work has been treated?
Well, you can't just put everything on Nikola Tesla. This has been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Galileo and all these people, they all went through the same thing. So the organization that existed in their time that is kind of akin to what I'm talking about now was, of course, the Catholic Church and its various nefarious organizations, like this so-called Opus Dei, which is Latin for the work of God. Well, it's actually, in English, it's observing how they behave, the dirty work of God. So this is just something that's intrinsic to the human species, whether there's a technology involved or not. So, you know, Nikola Tesla got a good jolt of it, but then so did a lot of other people. So it's not so much when looking all the way back into antiquity, you know, even Pythagoras got it. It's not the technology so much as there's an understanding that's not desired to exist, if you see what I mean.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's kind of what I've been so curious about, what I've been trying to wrap my head around and racking my brain about, is the why, is the what is so dangerous.
Well, that's why we've wrapped it up, you know, into the comical statement of why the Y-connected power system. Why the why?
Right. There's tricks in language every step of the way.
Yeah.
Man, so I have heard you say also there's a lot of misinformation out there about Tesla. Could you clear that up?
It's all misinformation. It's all misinformation. It's either deliberate misinformation or it's, you know, ignorant people spouting their conception of what Tesla did. But that's, you know, what Tesla did is occult knowledge. He wasn't into communicating it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't make claims that Tesla said this or did that unless he actually said it, or that you can build what he did. So basically, you know, I can't operate like that because I'm an engineer and I have to produce things that work. And if they don't work, I don't get paid.
Right. So elements of the disinformation, would you say that it's all these stories about death rays and that kind of stuff? Is that a distraction from people?
Oh, no. Tesla's death ray is an actual engineerable device. It's not really that difficult to understand. The information on it has finally come out, but it's not something that the mainstream physicists or whatever are going to be interested in, because to them and their understanding, it can't work because Tesla was operating on a whole different base, philosophical base and experimental base than these people. So even though a lot of Tesla stuff is easy to produce, it, in their mind, it's just not real. So they're not going to go that route.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there were periods in the past, perhaps, even before Tesla, maybe ancient Egypt, where electricity was harnessed more properly?
Well, I don't know if they had an interest in that type of technology back then.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be something else that was harnessed.
Yeah. There are some strange hieroglyphic pictures of them holding what looks like some strange kind of light bulb, but it doesn't seem to have connections to the way we think of electricity, so I was a bit curious.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, we're dealing with a lot of speculation, and that's kind of what I like to avoid, because you can just keep going in that,
right,
and then it just becomes, you know, a dummy load for your activities, is to speculate and theorize on things that you can't possibly have any knowledge of. I'm kind of stuck in a situation now where this next phase that I'm going to be working on in my research is heavily involves music and Pythagorean's understanding of these things, which goes back to the ancient Egyptians. You know, and how did these people use sound to levitate rocks and do all these type of things when there's really no information available on the subject at all. So how am I going to provide an engineering dissertation on that? That's kind of what I'm up against right now, but I'm sure I'll figure out some way around it by it's time to give the talk. And then as usual with these presentations, they get me involved so deep into theoretical study that, you know, a book comes out afterwards and it takes about 2 years to put that book together. I'm still only one-third into the book on the last presentation and two-thirds of the way through the book on the previous presentation. So I'm kind of loading myself up pretty heavy here.
That's so interesting that you're getting into this science of music and this Pythagorean stuff, because just recently we talked about a Russian scientist who was somewhat marginalized, or at least he was quiet about some of his fringe investigations, but this Russian scientist, I've used Google Translator to try to translate some of it, but you know, some of it comes out like gobbledygook, but he talks about the eight octaves and goes into the science of basically what you're talking about, using anti-gravity properties or something like that. It's definitely over my head, but there seems to be not only electricity, but the secret science of music that's been suppressed and hidden too.
Oh, exactly. It's not, you know, more so than electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So music, electricity have always been the same thing.
Interesting.
In the early days, you know, when I was involved with RCA and in the Navy, mainly because of my musical work in the Navy, because I built and operated the broadcast station on the base and was responsible for the programming and all the rest of it, is the people that I gathered around me, there was a guy that had a master's degree in music, and I was already partially into so-called classical music, and he told me, you need to start getting into Bach. He goes, with your mind, you need to start listening to Bach. So I started getting into the music of Bach and his contemporaries, and it got me so hooked that, you know, I did an associate's degree study of music in college and listened to Bach several hours every day, which I still do. And then I saw immediately that there's a concrete connection between the music of Bach and polyphase power systems, like we've just been talking about with the Delta Y connections and what have you. And it's always been an interest of mine to connect polyphase power with polyphonic music, which I've actually managed to do in my more recent mathematical studies, what's called Verser algebra. So now with the Pythagorean deal and all that, I'm taking that to the next level now. And I did write a paper on that.
Wow.
I forget what it was called. It was a two-part paper. It was called the Camp David Antenna, and then it was Symbolic Operators from Stymest to Pythagoras Back in Time. And those two papers kind of laid the groundwork for where I'm going on this, and it's going to be the basis for my next presentation. So music and electricity are going to be connected very closely together in this next presentation.
Wow, that is so interesting. Now, you're looking into these natural systems that seem to be suppressed. Has what you learned over the years given you any added insight into the nature of reality or how this Earth and its atmosphere as a system works?
Well, I don't know exactly what you mean by works. But again, I'm not one to extrapolate too far over the edge either.
Right. Well, I guess I'm trying to, for the audience, get an understanding of these realms that you're looking into, what some of their practical applications for society could be, or how could they be engineered in a technological sense?
Well, that's the very situation that I'm trying to avoid, and Pythagoras was adamantly opposed to, as well as even Plato.
Mm-hmm.
So as this, to convert things into technology. So when you say convert things into technology, you're talking about producing something that becomes a mechanism for capitalism. I have no interest in any of that.
Right. Okay.
So music, the interest music lies in that people like to listen to it. Well, classical music is virtually extinct.
Right.
If you're a classical musician, you're in the welfare line. You're in the food stamp office.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, in terms of modern society and its aims and desires, what I'm working on is of absolutely no interest whatsoever. So I don't know how to say technology other than, you know, I can build better audio amplifiers, or I may be able to develop a more powerful musical scale.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, lift rocks or whatever with music, but that's not something I'm going to go around and advertise.
Right.
You know, nor would I want, you know, the wrong people to start implementing that, even though their, you know, belief system is adamantly opposed to it. So I'm not looking in terms of technology.
Fair point.
The technology is a recent process or phenomena. The technology wasn't, you know, an all-encompassing thing for most of human existence on this earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like you could use the music knowledge, ultimately you could possibly use it to lift stones. What could you use the electric knowledge for?
Well, in this case, the practical end of it is my seismic advanced warning system. So that's the one thing that is the practical aspect of all this. Otherwise, I mean, most of this stuff is for, you know, observing and studying nature. It's a philosophical situation.
Mm-hmm.
And society is not interested in these things anymore for the most part, but there is a certain percentage that is. Otherwise, you wouldn't be interviewing me, or people, you know, wouldn't be supporting my work to the extent they are.
Yeah, I've had you requested several times, and I've gone through a lot of the material I could find, and I do think it's really interesting. It's definitely a bit over my head, but it has to be, because this stuff is totally left out of all education, and you really have to dig and have like an internal drive, like you do, to really get into it at this depth. But I have heard you talk about a little bit about how electricity works in the ionosphere and in space, which is kind of, you know, not something we learned in school. How does electricity work, like in outer space or with the ionosphere?
Well, you're kind of putting a pretty broad question before me.
Fair. Okay, well, we're told that space is a vacuum. From what I hear from your work, everything outside of the ionosphere is a conductor, correct?
Yeah, but a very rarefied conductor. So you might only have one or two molecules residing in a cubic centimeter of space, but then there's a lot of cubic centimeters of space, and the voltages are extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
So Tesla had determined that the electrostatic potential of the sun was 20 billion volts positive. Now, that's a lot of electrostatic force.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's a lot of surface area on that force, and these atoms and molecules and ions that might only be one per cubic centimeter, when you start adding up a volume and a given radius from the sun of how much electrification there is, you're talking about astronomical electrical forces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ionosphere is a terminus for that, whatever its surface area can receive. And then there's this one tiny, thin little gap that surrounds the surface of the Earth, and that's the atmosphere, and this is an electrostatic condenser, and we are living in this electrostatic condenser with the electrical environment of the interior of the Earth and the electrical environment of the exterior of the Earth beyond the ionosphere. So it's a very concentrated electrical environment that, because it's uniform and it's not varying with respect to time at a very rapid rate, is not sensible to us.
Right. See, yeah, I think this is super interesting. This is kind of what I meant by the nature of reality, or at least some of the systems that make up the place we live. And you mentioned the sun. I've heard you talk about the sun in a far different way than I was taught in school. Can you tell us about it? There's apparently no fusion going on in the sun.
Yeah, that's actually generally understood. When I studied this stuff at Sonoma State, along with my RCA background, it was understood that the process of energy generation in the sun is not understood. The so-called nuclear phenomenon only occur in the disruptive discharges around sunspots, when you get sudden bursts of ultraviolet and X-rays and the other things that are attendant to a nuclear reaction. But in general, the origin of the energy in the sun is not known and never will be known. It's unknowable. And it's not necessarily energy to start with. That comes out, you know, in this apparent fact. It's not absolutely determined, but I'm convinced of it, that you cannot see direct light in outer space. You cannot see the light of the stars. You can't see the light of the sun. Light only comes to being when physical matter is involved. And this primary force strikes the physical matter, and then you see light. Like, you can't see light passing from a light bulb to the page of paper you're reading on the table. You can only see the light on the paper. You can't see it in space, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I definitely do. I think that's really interesting, something that really I haven't heard a lot of people talk about at all, but why would you be able to see light in the vacuum of space? I mean, we hear about people who go into the holographic reality theory and all this stuff, but the premise is always based on the idea that you need an interaction between light and matter. So in outer space, why would you see the sun?
Yeah, it appears from, you know, the information I've gathered that the sun does not initially put out light. So, I mean, we can look at a light bulb and see light.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the sun in outer space, forever protective measures, even if there is no light, it will still damage your eyes, apparently, from, you know, I have no personal experience on this, but judging from the statements, you know, that were made by the original people that went out there before the whole situation got kind of covered up,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to look in that direction, but you can't see it. So the sun's putting out something else. So this opens up the whole question, which will cause any astronomer to go into violent convulsions. I've witnessed it. That this whole Einsteinian endearment that if you have a star 1 light year away, it will take 1 year for the light to reach the Earth. Well, if what the star is transmitting is not light, then why should there be such a propagation velocity? The propagation velocity would be the time it takes for the light that's produced on Earth by the impact of the star. In this case, we could use the sun because there's more light. That would be limited to that particular velocity, where the actual, whatever you want to call it, induction, might be a good word, coming from the sun, may not have any propagation delay whatsoever.
That's so interesting and so contradictory to at least our typical layman's understanding of space and of light and the sun. I've heard you mention the sun most likely is hollow, right?
Yeah, and the Earth and all of these spherical objects in free space would pretty much have to be hollow.
Oh, the Earth as well?
Yeah.
That's fascinating, and that makes sense to me.
In fact, the responses on my instruments at Landers, you know, with the super seismograph I had there that was 1 billion times more sensitive than the average seismograph, and all the telluric electrical receiving equipment, whatever, would indicate that the Earth is hollow, because if it wasn't hollow, you couldn't get a sustained sinusoidal waveform. But the Earth rings like a bell.
Wow.
When you get a big blast earthquake, like, you know, in Indonesia or Japan, I've watched it on my instruments, the Earth rings like a bell for hours. But the pitch is of an extremely low frequency, where one cycle might take 2 or 3 minutes.
Wow.
This was how Tesla was talking about, you know, that through resonance, he could cause the Earth to fly to pieces just by a simple one-horsepower oscillator, because every horsepower over every cycle adds. And if you do it at that frequency, then they compound on each other, and after a course of several days, the energy is all accumulated to a phenomenal value, and being that it's tuned to the frequency of the Earth, it would cause, you know, a lot of stress, just like the you know, using an audio tone to break a wine glass.
Wow.
The initial power is actually small. The power is defined as the rate of energy flow. So what's going on is you have an oscillator, and it's delivering a small amount of power over a period of time. Now, as that period of time gets longer and longer, you know, each little unit of power or energy becomes additive until eventually, you know, it's the same thing with a car battery. You can take a car battery, which is only 12 volts, and you can put your hands across it, and if they're not wet or whatever, you know, you can do such with impunity. Yet you can take that car battery and you can connect it to an inductance coil and let the magnetic field draw out of the car battery at a slow rate of, you know, maybe 1 ampere over a period of the 15 minutes it would take to charge an inductance coil like that of a secondary high side of a generating station transformer. And you can put your hands across that and not feel anything, but if you break the current, all the energy of that magnetic field comes out at once and it will electrocute you totally dead.
Huh.
You see, kind of see how I'm getting at, how time's involved here?
Yeah.
So that 12 volts, if you use a vacuum breaker and you break the current flow that battery is putting into those windings of the substation transformer, the voltage developed by the winding of the substation transformer will be so high that it will flash over the bushing, which is rated for about 1.5 million volts. It'll just jump right over it.
Wow. It can be scary that something so simple could cause such damage.
Well, this is, you know, what Tesla showed with his resonance phenomena, is that the continuous applications of small quantities of power can develop into massive quantities of energy, and that's what he accomplished at Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just compounds.
Right, compounded until eventually, you know, it's quite likely that the Earth's own energy entered into the situation, and that's what enabled him to produce a fountain of electricity there. Because according to the calculations, the fountain of electricity that was described by his switchboard operator greatly exceeded any summation of energy that he could have put, you know, into the Earth, or it's an interesting situation, and we'll never know the truth of the matter because that experiment hasn't been duplicated and possibly cannot be because people don't have that knowledge.
Man, I find this so interesting because the basic understanding of everything seems to be just fundamentally wrong. It seems like electricity plays such a bigger role in the Earth's energy, the sun's energy, how things work, but we are just kind of taken into this direction of it's combustion, it's fusion, it's heat and light, but no one ever mentions the electrical component.
Yeah, even though, you know, from the Maxwellian standpoint, heat and light is electricity.
Right, that's what I'm getting out of this conversation, that it seems to be fundamentally electric also. I mean, you see lightning, that has light.
Well, from the standpoint of J.J. Thompson, even matter itself is only an aggregation of electrical forces. And this fits in well with the way that the great philosophers of antiquity thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's in accord with the understanding that humans have had for millennia. And then all of a sudden we're told that all that's wrong, and that the sun, you know, is a big nuclear bomb in the sky, and that everything's thermodynamic and is going to die and burn out, and, you know, and the universe is going to disappear. We're even told that the universe has finite boundaries in time and space, you know, that there's a brick wall at the end of the universe. These people are so bold as to put those kind of attitudes forth when that basically is in contradiction to the very definition of the word universe, which has to encompass everything and has to be infinite in both directions, small to large.
Man, well, this has just been super fascinating. It is about that time that we start wrapping it up. I believe, like you mentioned about the fundraiser, this is an Indiegogo campaign, correct?
Right.
And how long does it run for?
From my understanding, it's 2 months.
Okay. And it is underway right now. So people who are listening, who are fascinated by this conversation, can go and pitch in a little bit for you?
Well, that's what we're hoping, so we can kind of secure our operation here and make it more functional and complete things that we've set out to do by the end of the year.
Perfect. So if they just search Eric Dollard on Indiegogo, it'll come up.
Well, not Eric Dollard. If you want to see the people that are defaming me, then you can go to ericdollard.com. If you want to see what's really going on, you have to go to ericpdollard.com.
Okay, yeah, and this is something I experienced myself, and the listeners should know that the campaign against you is using that ericdollard.com website, and I think that, you know, this is pretty consistent with people who are on the right track to be defamed and to be blasted like this. So people shouldn't find it to be that out of the ordinary, but that is kind of what's happening. And clear the air, Eric P. Dollard would be your website.
That's correct.
Perfect.
Yeah, and there's I put a heavy emphasis on photographs of things. So there's literally thousands of photographs of the various things that I'm involved with that some people might find quite fascinating. Even just the beauty of the nature that I live in actually seems to be one of the things people are most interested in, is though, you know, what does it look like where I live in the forest? And then I've uncovered some of this Bell telephone installations that are still intact and work, and take hundreds of pictures of details of those. None of this stuff can be seen anywhere anymore. It's the last of its existence. And then pretty detailed photographic record of the process of us constructing these several mile long antenna structures to use for telluric work.
Okay. From what I understand also from hearing your previous interviews, of course, your books are available at a couple of different places, but if they buy them at a specific place, you get the most benefit, right?
Yeah, a lot of these things are kind of abstract to me, so I don't know, how to answer that exactly, but I do know that the ericpdollard.com is set up to be the way to go about this, where it benefits the situation and you have the broadest access to my material.
Perfect. Okay. Because, you know, you do have a couple of people working with you that are kind of handling your digital footprint, and you're kind of out there in the woods, kind of disconnected from that.
Yeah, it's abstract. I have no internet. I never see any of that.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Eric, this has been awesome. You've definitely thoroughly blown my mind more than a couple of times. Definitely a lot of things I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to again and try to get a better understanding for. But thanks again. You know, I'm sorry it has been such a rough road. I really empathize with you. Best of luck on your current projects, man. Take care of yourself out there.
Okay, well, you too. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Okay.
Whoop, there it is, party people. It seems to me that Eric might have just blown more minds than the U.S. military, and even though so much of that was obviously over my head, I think there were a lot of really, really interesting nuggets to take away from this show, a lot of pieces that fit into the big puzzle and jive with things that a lot of other researchers talk about. Of course, as we discussed at the end there, there's a lot of negative stuff out there on the internet about Eric. Obviously, this entire website at the domain ericdollard.com is dedicated to blasting him, and sure, you can look at that, but you'd have to expect someone in this position to be constantly attacked and harassed and their character under constant bombardment. It's not really a surprise to me. Yet, I can't think of any other guests I've interviewed where a domain of their first and last name is just a slander site, except maybe Jordan Maxwell, but he sold that stuff. So I feel like this is a real typical style of distraction from the information he presents. They're attacking the guy, not the information. And you just have to listen to him and assess if you think he sounds like he's crazy or he knows what he's talking about. I think if he was just making stuff up, I'd be pretty impressed with how well he can pull that off. Definitely not my easiest interview, but also very valuable to me, I would say. Very out there insights into the sun and the hollow earth, the science of electricity and music. It all got me going. And then, of course, in the Plus show, we also talk about Eric's problems with the current working model for measuring light, Eric's problems with the Big Bang, the science behind his earthquake detection prediction system, the algebraic four-quadrant mathematics he developed, ley lines and energy nodes that have charges and qualities that seem almost paranormal, the sciences that the Nazis were working on, more about hollow planets and music and the healing properties of it. And Eric also adds himself to a long list of guests saying that the waves and signals in the air are very bad for human health. All of these things and more make it really one of my favorite episodes. I just think it's pretty different. And we all know that's the THC sweet spot. So big thanks again to Eric and his people who helped make it happen. Believe it or not, a guy who lives in his car, it's tough to get him on a landline. But we did it. So consider donating to him, because I don't think he's a master defrauder. He barely even has the information for his own fundraiser. He's just a mad scientist out in the woods trying to do mad science. And I don't say that disparagingly. I'm just saying it didn't seem to me like his whole spiel was an elaborate setup for a phony fundraiser or an advertisement to buy his books. And we've all heard people like that. And I think you'd really have to stretch to make a case that Eric's playing that game. So be sure to check out ericpdollard.com for that. Also, if we in the States fall victim to any kind of widespread EMP attack on the energy grid, which is a hype meme that has been out there, I think Eric did a great job describing the setup. And with so many pots that seem to be boiling right now, it's just another thing to juggle. And what can you do, really? But you know, that's it for me. Thanks again. Things are going so well, and you know, I'm not really about that hard sell, but I am getting just a couple weeks away from the big financial deadline for this trip I've kind of been talking about. I'd like to take it. It's halfway around the world with one of the most well-liked researchers around. I'm definitely going to be a little starstruck, but I'm going to work hard to capture some great footage of these ancient sites with an expert who can give information I don't think anybody else can. And it's going to be something really special for the Plus people, because they'll be the ones who help make it happen. And of course, it would be just a dream come true for me. And I'm not asking for donations here, not asking for something for nothing. Just get yourself a membership to the show you like. Get twice as much entertainment for your time, or maybe pick up a shirt or a weed grinder from conspiracies.net. I am really confident we're going to make it, but if you've been on the fence, now would be a helpful time for me to have you join Plus. And this is definitely a great episode to continue on with. I've also added some new features to the Plus forums and also a little review widget to the episodes on the website so I can see where the hits and misses are. Always important to know if I start getting way off base somehow. But I think I have pretty good self-awareness compared to a lot of other hosts, so I'm not too worried. A lot of shows that are still operating in the old paradigm are completely crippled by their own format. And we're never going to have those problems either, so another positive. Either way, guys, keep fighting the good fight. That is it from me this week. I've done my part. Your move, keepers of the electric quarantine. Your frickin' move.
As you mop up the remnants of your melted mind, consider this. The high-quality, commercial-free show you just enjoyed is what we call THC-free. But you can spend twice as much time with Greg Carlwood and all his great guests by becoming a member of the Higher Side Chats Elite for just $5. And you'll get the 5 extended 2-hour episodes that come out each month. Because an honest, open-minded, and uncensored exploration into the fringe will never be brought to you by your corporate overlords, but rather must be funded by the loyal listeners willing to take that ride. So join at thehiresidechatsplus.com, and on top of twice as much show, get your own easy-to-use RSS feed URL for convenient listening on any device. Suggest guests on your member profile, comb through the archives of all the ones you missed, and continue the conversation even further on the new THC Plus Forum, where you can scratch that higher side itch in between shows with the rest of us and hold your head up high, knowing that your subscription supports a show you love, produces the free version for everyone else, and stands as a small act of rebellion against those nefarious puppet masters of the power pyramid. Treat yourself. It's time.